So what are you thinking about the Bible?
Well, the Bible has a lot of good information in it. If you can apply some of the information, it can really change your life. It can really put you on the right path. But it also has some information in it that's detrimental to people as well. You have to have discernment with what you're reading in the book, in the Bible. In the Bible, where you see the word God everywhere, that's a mistranslation by accident on purpose. The original word is gods with an S. It's always with an S when you back engineer the actual word, the translations, you find out it's gods, not God singular. Elohim is also a plural term. It's not a singular term. And you also discover that Yahweh is actually Enlil from the Sumerian cuneiform pantheon, from the Sumerian cuneiform text. He's Enlil. It becomes Yahweh in the biblical text. And just all these correlations between the different ancient characters from the Sumerian text end up in the biblical text. And you find out in the book of Deuteronomy that these gods are fighting each other over resources and people. So if you read, anyone who reads the book of Deuteronomy begins to realize this probably isn't the creator of the universe that wrote this. When God tells people, God is supposed to be all-knowing, all-loving. Ain't he the same all the time? Then all of a sudden, you're reading the book of Deuteronomy, and he's saying, there's one person in this city that doesn't like me. I want you guys to go over there. Now, keep in mind, they've never met these people. Kill the women, kill the children, kill their animals, and bring the spoils of war back to me. Now, what kind of God needs the spoils of war, and what kind of God needs to kill children? There's also a verse in there in the book of Deuteronomy where God tells a man, if you see a woman walking through the land and you decide to rape her, and the word rape is the actual word, look it up, you can. And if after you rape her, if you decide you want to make her your wife, you can keep her as your wife too. Now you have rape and abduction. Now, you're saying to yourself, the creator of the universe, okay, has all power, all knowing, omnipotent, omniscient. Why in the world would he write stuff like that or give a man the ability to write stuff like that to put in his book? In some cases, it's not talking about the creator of the universe. We have to be able to discern that. We have to be able to have the eye to see that some of this is manipulation for the power of people to put on top of other people. In the New Testament, Jesus says, honor your slave master. Now, why would we want to honor a slave master? As you would honor me, he says. Do you think Jesus really would say something like that? I don't. I think that his message was pure and clean and clear, and that he was trying to usher back a level of Christ consciousness back in humanity. And that's the return. The second return is when we all reach a level of Christ consciousness. That's when Jesus comes back. He comes back in our minds, not in a physical form. And for people to take his words and skewer it around to make it okay for slavery, I think that's a big thing where we see now the injection of human minds, not the creator of the universe. So you have to be discerning with the biblical text.
Who is Jesus to you? In your eyes, who is Jesus?
His name is Yeshua. Okay. Jesus is, first of J is a recent letter. J is not that old. So it really was originally Jesus. And that name, Jesus, means hail Zeus. Okay. So you're calling on Zeus when you say Jesus. Now, one of the Sumerian people who converted over to the Greek gods. But when you, his name is Yeshua, and so Yeshua to me, very powerful person, very spiritual, high level of knowledge, a student of the Egyptian mysteries. When Jesus disappears from the Bible, he actually ends up in Egypt, okay? You can find this information in a book that was kept out of the biblical text called the Gospel of the Holy Twelve. And in the Gospel of the Holy Twelve, he shows up in Egypt, and we know that's a fact because I take people on tour every year to Egypt, and I take them to the house that Jesus lived in. It's a crypt. It's actually worship. People come there to see that bed that he laid in every single year. When I take people there, we take them straight there. And we know the path that he traveled throughout Egypt because it's a huge sign outside that Coptic church where he lived that shows where he went. Now, when he was in Egypt, what did he go there for? To learn the Egyptian mysteries. Who taught the Egyptian mysteries? Thoth, the Atlantean priest king, the person I wrote this book about. And so Thoth was the teacher of the Egyptian mysteries, or the ancient mysteries of what it was called. And then he leaves there and he goes to Tibet to learn Qigong and Reiki healing, which was confirmed by the Dalai Lama. And then he heads down into India to learn the mystic arts, teaching reincarnation all the way back. Then the Bible picks him up at the age of 32. I call my son out of Egypt. He shows up on the back of a donkey, proclaims himself to be the Messiah. So it's a big story. I think that he had a big message. I don't think people were able to grasp it at the time. But his message was that, not that he was coming back, but that the Christ would return, the Christ consciousness.
Where did you get this information? What book did you read that said this? Because this isn't, you didn't come up with this. You read this from somewhere. What did you read that told you this?
The Gospel of the Holy Twelve.
The Gospel of the Holy Twelve.
Another apocrypha text that was, you know, kept out of the canonized Bible.
Got it. And that's what you learned from this?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So let me ask you, there's a lot of people that, you know, smart people, mathematicians, a lot of skeptics that are out there as well. How many people agree with what you have to say? How many people agree with this?
Well, I got 8 million people following my accounts across all platforms. I mean, I don't know.
So I'm not talking about that part. Of course, you know, when you're talking with this level of firmness, there's a lot of, that's why I'm curious. I'm curious to know, you know, how you come up with your beliefs.
Yeah.
But why is it, if that's what you believe in, more people don't believe in that? Why do you think
we're
small sect?
When you're born, you're given a name, a race, and a religion,
right,
and you spend the rest of your life defending a false identity. You don't know who you are. I don't know who I am. You were given your name. I was given my name. Who's Billy Carson? I didn't come up with that name. Somebody gave me that name. And then somebody said, get on your knees and pray before you go to bed. Say the Lord's Prayer before you go to bed. And so I got on my knees and I said the Lord's Prayer. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come. You know. But then when you trace back that Lord's Prayer, whose prayer is that? That's the prayer of Ptah. Who's Ptah? Ea Enki from the Sumerian tablets. He wrote that prayer in ancient cuneiform, which then made it all the way into the Bible. And you think you're praying to God, you're saying the prayer of Ptah. So we've been brainwashed. We've been programmed because for generations, we keep getting handed down this system where we're given this false creation of who we are, and we believe it wholeheartedly. We'll fight for it to the absolute death. People will die over those things that were given to them, not that they came up with on their own initially or originally. And so it's a dangerous thing because we have a lot of people walking around that just took the programming code, and they don't even understand really who they are or what they're all about. That's why so many people don't walk in their passion. So many people don't even know what their passion is because they've been given and told what their passion is going to be, and they have no clue how to find out who they really truly are or what they would love to be involved in or what their passion truly is. So we have a lot of NPCs walking around, non-players out here just walking around, have no clue, just programs in the matrix. But then you have a few of us that have discovered who we are, that are working on trying to go to inner space instead of outer space, dig deep within ourselves, learn how to walk in our power, find out what our passion is, maximize that, and access that power and spread that power throughout the world.
Would you say your parents were Christians?
They were quasi-Christians. So they didn't go to church, but, you know, my dad would make me do book reports on the Bible from the time I was a little kid. My mother would make me say the prayers, you know. So that in that way, they were Christians.
When did you stop?
I stopped probably, I say, maybe around 12 or 13, I realized something was too much. There was too much contradiction in the text. Because remember, I'm doing book reports on the biblical text. And when I got to the point where God said, I create the good and I create the evil, do what I say at the Lord, that's in Isaiah, then I realized something was really off here, because I realized through my studies that God had killed over 3 million people in the Bible, and the Satan didn't kill anybody. So I said, wait a minute, something's a little off here. He's killing everybody, and Satan didn't kill anybody. And so we have to really take a look. And the deeper I dug into Deuteronomy, then I realized there's something wrong. What it was at that moment, I couldn't figure out, but I just knew something was a little off. I dabbled in it again later on to see maybe if there was something that I missed. And again, later on in my life, in my like late 20s, I said, it just doesn't make any sense. There's too many question marks. And every time you ask a question, they say, don't question God. Don't question the Lord. Blind faith. And I'm thinking, if I'm going to put all of my eternity into one book, if I'm saying this one book is going to lead me to eternity and I don't know everything about it, every aspect about it, I can't question it. I can't dig deeper to get more knowledge out of it. Then I think there's something wrong with that. I think there's something being hidden from me. And I'd rather be able to dig deeper, get more knowledge, get more understanding versus people shunning me away from trying to dig deeper to get more answers. And I think that's a big problem. And I think the people that are shunning away and getting and stopping you from getting those answers don't have the answers themselves.
When you went through this journey that you're going through, are your parents seeing you go through the self-actualization where you're having your own philosophies? Are they watching you, witnessing you going through this?
Oh, yeah.
So how old were you when they're watching this?
Pretty much from 7 all the way up. I mean, they gradually saw me changing. When I was 7 years old, you know, I realized one thing. This is what changed my whole life. My friends kept going to the ice cream truck. They had money every day, even though we were in the ghetto. Poor, broke. We had nothing. We were getting money from, donated to us from a food donated from to us from local church and other people in the neighborhood. And we were taking showers outside in the backyard because we didn't have water on. We plugged the hose into our neighbor's house. And I'm saying, how in the hell can they afford the ice cream truck every single day? So I go outside and I say to myself, there's got to be something I can do. I said, I'm going to go inside and get all my toys. I put all my toys in an old Winn-Dixie milk crate, and I went door to door. I violated my mom's rules about leaving the circumference of the
vicinity,
house.
Yeah.
And I went door to door around the whole block. I squared the block and asked for donations in exchange for my toys. And so I sold all my toys that day, and I ended up with like $13 and change. And I went to the ice cream truck, and I got my bazooka bubble gum with my comic strip inside of it, and I realized something. I said, wow, I'm going to save myself. There's nobody coming to save me. I am my own savior. And that changed my life forever. And Seven years old. My mom saw me standing in the picture window of the house we were renting, and I had a couple of dollars in my hand. She said, what's wrong, son? I said, I don't belong here. I'm getting out.